Glad we get a few more minutes this afternoon to study together before we go back to the world and to our work. And I'm glad for everybody that's here tonight. This morning we opened the book of Nehemiah. I'm going to ask you to do that one more time. For those who aren't here this morning, I want to do just a few lessons from this book. It's a book that helps us understand about building and building among God's people. And Nehemiah was a man who God chose to do that. He was a man that lived a long time ago, back in during the Persian Empire and during the time when Israel had come back from captivity. And they had been back from captivity for almost 90 years, and the walls of Jerusalem still weren't rebuilt. And God sent him back to rebuild those walls. And I think in looking at this book, you can see some good applications for what it means to rebuild, to build people up, to encourage God's people, to strengthen one another. And I sort of ask you this morning to think about today and the next couple of weeks about things that we need to do here to build this group. Are there those who need help? Are there those who need strengthened spiritually? Are there those who need fortified? Because we're not talking about physical walls, we're talking about people, the walls of God's people. And are there walls with cracks in them? Nehemiah was sent because the walls in Jerusalem had been torn down and they had been burned, the gates were burned, and the Lord wanted that city to be repaired, but somebody had to get involved and to take the lead and do it. And so this morning I gave you the first three bricks. I called this lesson, hand me another brick, as Nehemiah is putting bricks in place to rebuild this city. And the first one is I just said that somebody has to take an interest. Nehemiah got the word that the city was in ruins. The people were depressed and discouraged, and he said, and he wanted to know. He wanted to know what the condition was. And people have to, you have to have somebody that cares about other people. You have to have somebody that's a part of the group, not merely because they're here to go through the routine, go through some checklist of going through some worship services, some activities, doing their duty of giving and taking the Lord's Supper and such. But somebody who really cares about the other people sitting in the pews. We need that. Every single person. That's necessary. And the second thing, in order to build, we have to have God's favor. People, someone who prays, and it's because this is not a human project. It's not like constructing a literal building somewhere. It's God's project, and we're dealing with human souls, and we're dealing with eternal consequences. And so I'm not working on a car, and I'm not working on any plumbing issue, but I'm trying to help people. And that throws it into a whole other category. And we won't be very successful in our efforts, no matter how good our intentions are, if we don't pray and ask God's favor to be with us. And the third thing, we just need to make ourselves a part of the solution to the problems. We got to be willing to be involved ourselves in the work. That means we have to assume some risks that go along with that. We have to make some personal sacrifices. We have to roll up our sleeves. We have to be willing to get our hands dirty, get bruised and cut up a little bit in order to help others. This is an active, not a passive relationship that we share together. And if you've been here but you haven't actually been very involved in the building process, and that's what this series of lessons is for, to try to encourage you to take a more active part and pick up a brick and begin to do some work in this group. I'm just going to add three more things to the list tonight as we look at these different things that we can observe in Nehemiah's book. And so I want you to look in chapter 2 and just notice the first thing. In chapter 2 is that I think we can notice that growth has to be planned. In chapter 2, and I want to read for you, before we read 12 through 16 that I have on the screen, let's read verse 7 and 8. Because while Nehemiah was still in Persia, and it was around January or December when he got the message about what was happening, he began planning. And he didn't actually go into the presence of the king until April of that year, the next year. And so, but here's what it says. When he got to the king, when he came before the king, 4 months he had been preparing for that this opportunity to talk to the king about this issue. And he said to the king, the king said to me, verse 6 says, "How long will your journey be and when will you return?" And so it says, "It pleased the king to send me, and I gave him a definite time. And I said to the king, 'If it please the king, let letters be given to me for the governors of the provinces beyond the river, that they may allow me to pass through until I come to Judah, and a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the fortress, which is by the temple, for the wall of the city, and for the house to which I will go.'" And the king granted them to me because of the good hand of God was with me. So the first thing I noticed was that for 4 months, Nehemiah was planning. And he was thinking. And when he got there and the king asked him what he wanted, what his requests were, he was able to tell the king how long it would take. He was able to tell him that he would need some letters for safe passage to get there. He was able to tell him he would need letters for permission to get this fellow named Asaph to give him forest, give him timber out of the forest to build the gates and repair the walls. And so we see that he was a planner. He looked at details. He planned to go. And then when he got there, look if you would in chapter verse 12 through 16, he surveyed the situation very carefully before he began the work. Chapter 2 there, verse 12 through 16. "I arose in the night." Now he's arrived in Jerusalem. He says, "I arose at night, I and a few men who were with me. I didn't tell anyone what my God was putting in my mind to do for Jerusalem. And there was no animal with me except the animal on which I was riding. So I went out at night by the valley gate in the direction of the dragon's well, on the refuse gate, inspecting the walls of the Jerusalem which were broken down and its gates which were consumed by fire. I passed on to the fountain gate, to the king's pool, but there was no place for my mount to pass. So I went up by night to the ravine and inspected the wall. Then I entered the valley gate again and returned. And the officials didn't know where I'd gone or what I had done, nor had I as yet told the Jews, the priests, or the nobles, or the officials, or the rest who did the work." So when he got to Jerusalem, he was there for 3 days, and he surveyed the situation, and he didn't tell anybody what he was doing. And he examined everything very carefully. And it seems like that's a good principle for building and leadership. He assessed the extent of the damage for himself to know the reality of the situation. Here he'd been told, but now he's going to investigate it thoroughly for himself. And Nehemiah was decisive, he was proactive, but he was not impulsive, he was not haphazard. He planned very carefully. And so you might say that the presence of faith doesn't mean the absence of organization. Somebody says, "Well, I just do it by faith." Well, sometimes that means we just are impulsive and we just are careless about the way we do things and think things are just going to happen. That's not the way Nehemiah addressed the situation. He was careful and organized and he evaluated things. And we must plan, too, when we're trying to build spiritual walls in this congregation. Sometimes you might look at the projects you've attempted in the past and say, "Oh, that was terrible. I did a terrible job of that." And too many times that's because I had no real plan. I just jumped in and started hammering and started nailing without really thinking it through before I started. We can make these applications not just to the congregation but to the family. For example, maybe you want to make a plan and build your family spiritually. Well, how are you going to do that? What's your plan? Well, you might think, "Well, I'm going to study this book with them next year, 2011. You know, it's a few months ahead, but Nehemiah would have started planning now for what he's going to do in 2011 to build his family. He would have decided already. Maybe I'm going to study a certain book with my family next year. I'm going to take him to visit the shut-ins once a month. That's going to be in the program next year. I'm going to have neighbors over with a goal to get some Bible studies with my neighbors next year. And by the time 2011 is over, I want my kids to know this." You know, he's going to have some objectives that he can measure by the end of that year to see if he's met his goals. You know, growth has to be planned, even in the family. and it has to be planned when it comes to the congregation, a church. You know, when we look in the church, we say, as an individual, what am I going to do to help build this church? Well, what's your plan? What are you planning? Maybe you want to study with a young person. Maybe you want to help them deepen their faith. Well, what's your plan? Well, I'm going to start getting to know so-and-so this year. I'm going to spend 4 months just getting to know them, build some foundation, build a relationship. And then after that, I'm going to invite them after 4 months to meet with them and maybe ask them for a study. Or maybe you want to help somebody with a spiritual problem. Well, what's your plan? How are you going to go about that? How are you going to approach that? Sometimes one brother wants to help another, but he acts very rashly. He doesn't have any plan for how he's going to do it. Maybe you want to help somebody, but you need to know the right approach to take. Nehemiah would say, well, resist acting on your initial plan till you assess the situation. You might need to revise the plan according to the facts when you know all the facts about that situation. Maybe you need to get the facts from the elders. Maybe you need to think through them in details. How am I going to approach them? What am I going to say? Pray about it. Remember, Nehemiah spent 4 months in prayer and fasting and preparation before he ever went before the king. And then 3 days he surveyed the damage before he said anything to anybody. And so we're looking at the idea of growth that needs to be planned. To build a spiritual walls in a church, elders who want a group to grow closer or maybe become more evangelistic need to plan in detail. How are we going to do it? What are the costs? What's the objectives? What's the groundwork that we need to lay first? How are we going to measure our growth? We're not building walls of brick and mortar. We're working with people, with humans. Growth doesn't just happen. We need goals. They need to be stated. They need to be measurable. And Nehemiah planned. And I think that's a brick in the building and constructing process of people. We need to have a plan. But another thing that we have to deal with is criticism. You've got to get ready for criticism. And you've got to refuse to let that stop the work. In chapter 2, in verse 10, we find the first indication of opposition. I said this morning that when a person decides whether they're going to help or not, there's always those risks. They're going to run into difficulties. That there are risks involved, and a lot of times it keeps people from helping. And Nehemiah's fears were certainly realized. There was opposition, and it came in the form of several men. But here's the first verse that it mentions it in this book, chapter 2 and verse 10. Says, when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard about it, it was very displeasing to them that someone had come to seek the welfare of the sons of Israel. Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite. And later, when we get over to chapter verse 19 and 20, we find there's another fellow named Geshem the Arab. He's mentioned in chapter 2 and verse 19. And it said, when they heard about it, this is verse 19, they mocked us and they despised us and they said, what is this thing that you're doing? Are you rebelling against the king? And so the first thing I just want you to see is there's going to be opposition. And from these were high officials. Sanballat was the governor of Samaria, and so Judah and Jerusalem previously had been under his jurisdiction. And he didn't like it that they were going to be showing it, that Nehemiah would show an interest in these people. Those who dominate and control others prefer them to stay weak because it always makes those who dominate look a lot stronger. So sometimes it displeases people when somebody comes in and tries to help people grow. You ever been in a church like that? Ever been in a church where you come in and you see situations and you want to help, and then you perceive that the people in there really don't like it, that you're trying to get involved and help others? That's the case sometimes. So here you see that the people won't like that you want to help. And there's some techniques that the devil will use to try to discourage you when you want to help. And people don't like that. In this case, they said, well, you're rebelling against the king. Actually, they weren't. The king had previously issued a decree against building the walls, but now he'd given Nehemiah permission to do that. But they used that as a way to try to discourage them. They tried to make fun of them, make their efforts look pathetic, and they snickered at them and made fun of their interest in doing it. And then in chapter 4, you see that the discouragement didn't just quit. It was continual. There was opposition that was raised against them. It says in verse 1 of chapter 4, "It came about that when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became furious, very angry, and he mocked the Jews. And he spoke in the presence of his brothers and the wealthy men of Samaria, and he said, 'What are these feeble Jews doing? Are they going to restore it for themselves? How can they offer sacrifices? Can they finish in a day? Can they revive the stones from the dusty rubble, even the burned ones?' Now Tobiah the Ammonite was near him. And he said, 'Even what they are building, if a fox should jump on it, he would break their stone wall down.'" So obviously you can see the sarcasm. You can hear the way that they sort of run them down and said that this is a feeble effort. It'll never fly. And so you got these techniques. And the devil uses things like this, and you can probably name a dozen others, to discourage people who want to work and try to help a congregation grow. And if you really get involved, then there's going to be opposition. There'll be false accusations. There'll be misrepresentation of what the truth is. Because people who have little interest in the Lord's work, perhaps content with going through the rituals and doing things mechanically by the motions, won't like somebody like you because they don't want you to change things, make them look bad. They don't want you to rock the boat. They don't want you to make them look like the hypocrites that they are. The fact is, that we can see, is there will always be opposition to those who want to help. And that's Satan's business, to discourage us. And Nehemiah faced it, and we will face it too. The answer of Nehemiah to that was in chapter 2 and verse 20. "So I answered them," he said, "and he said, 'The God of heaven will give us success.'" They were successful. They did rebuild those walls. And they did it in the face of opposition. And their confidence was in someone other than themselves. The battle belongs to the Lord. The church is His people. And He wants the walls built. And you can't give in to the critics. And if we want God's approval, we have to work. And we have to build in spite of opposition. And so a brick that you might say that Nehemiah had to work with is this conviction that we must not let criticism stop the work. Can't let that stop the congregation from going forward and making progress. And then the last one is that we just need to encourage one another. We need to put our hands to the work. If you look in chapter 2 and verse 17 and 18, chapter 2 verse 17 and 18, it says, "Then I said to them, 'You see the bad situation we are in, that Jerusalem is desolate and its gates burned by fire. Come and let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer be a reproach.'" I want to suggest to you the first reason that we need to build is because God's glory is at stake. The people in Jerusalem, Nehemiah said, were a reproach. A disgrace. The city was in a disgraceful condition. The walls were tore down. They've been in the land since 539 B.C. And now it's 445 B.C. That's 90 years later. And it's still an unwalled city. It's a mess. And it's interesting that Nehemiah doesn't appeal to their vulnerability or their insecurity without having a wall, but it's the dishonor of their condition that he appeals to. I like Psalm 48. Look, if you would, just real quick over to Psalm 48, one of the many psalms that praise the Lord and the city of the Lord. And Jerusalem was supposed to be a glorious city in the Old Testament time. And just a couple of verses from this psalm illustrates. It says, "Great is the Lord and greatly to be praised in the city of our God, His holy mountain, beautiful in elevation. The joy of the whole earth is Mount Zion in the far north, the city of the great King. God in her palaces, He has made Himself known as a stronghold." We could read all of that, but the point is, as you look at this, you know, Mount Zion was the city of the great king. It was supposed to be the joy of the whole earth. It was supposed to be beautiful, a holy mountain, a very glorious thing. And here it is in Nehemiah's day, and he's come back, and he finds it's been 90 years since they've been there, and they haven't even rebuilt the walls. And the city that's supposed to be the glory of God in the middle of the earth, people have just sort of left it to go to ruins. They haven't done what was necessary to restore the city. And this problem needed to be resolved so that their city could once again be a glory to the mighty king. And you know, so he says, we need to see the situation as it is. The gates are burned, the city is desolate, and we need to rebuild the wall that we may no longer be a reproach. And in a sense, the church needs to put its hands to the work for the same exact reason, that we need to build the walls and strengthen one another so that it won't be a reproach, so that it won't be a disgrace upon the name of the Lord. We have this passage in Hebrews 10 that reminds us to assemble together, to come together. But why do we come together? He says, consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking our assembling, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another as we see the day approaching. Come together to build, to stimulate, to encourage one another to love and to good deeds. And in building one another up, we bring glory to the Lord and to His name. This group of people here should look very different than the world around us. We're a reflection of God. And so it's worth every bit of our energy and time and effort to come together to encourage one another and to build one another, that we can bring a glory and honor to the Lord. And what's impressive to me as he after he did this was how they responded. In verse 18, it says, "And I told them how the hand of my God had been favorable to me, and also about the king's words which he had spoken to me. And then they said, 'Let us arise and build.'" And so they put their hands to the good work. Nehemiah, I like the way that they responded. They said, it says, "Let us arise and build." And so they put their hands to the good work. It's significant that they said, "Let us arise and build." His approach elicited a voluntary desire on their part to work. Nehemiah didn't come with a whip. He didn't, beat them. He didn't force them. He didn't badger them or berate them. And good leaders aren't taskmasters. They're not slave drivers. They don't beat people to get them to work. We want people to work from their heart. We want it to come from deep down in your heart. People who want to work, they care about others, they love them, not because they're feeling forced or compelled by hatefulness or badgering of others. And Nehemiah also led them, led the work himself. It's maybe noteworthy to see in verse 17 that he said, "We," note the bad situation that we are in, "and come let us rebuild the wall that we may no longer be a reproach." He identifies himself with the need. You might imagine the response if Nehemiah had come and said, "You folks have gotten yourselves into a big mess. And you know what you need to do? You need to rebuild that wall. And if you want me, I'll be in my office. You can come and see me. After all, I wasn't part of the problem to begin with." I doubt he would have got the same response from them if that's the way he approached the issue. He motivates the city by saying, "I'm here to do this with you. I'm going to lead you in this. I'm going to roll my sleeves up and do the work." And so he reasons with him. You see the bad situation. God is with us on this. The king has given his support. And their reaction is significant. They said, "Let us arise and build." We need a group here with that same attitude. A group of leaders who go before us, calling us to build. A group of individuals make individual determinations. "I'm going to do my part." Every group has moments when its momentum wanes. It gets kind of stagnant. So this lesson is more, in my mind, preventative. It says, rekindle your fire now. Let Nehemiah motivate you to do radical things, to get busy, to bring honor to the Lord by being a church who works to honor His name. So, again, that's our 3 points tonight that I want to share with you from Nehemiah. Three bricks. If I was a dramatist, there's some preachers who like to be real dramatic, I would have brought a brick for everybody and passed them out as you went out this evening, told you to write somebody's name on it that you plan to build this week. But I'm not that radical. But wouldn't be a bad idea. Wouldn't be a bad idea if you picked up a brick, set it on your counter at home and wrote somebody's name on it, say, I'm going to build this person this year. There's some cracks there, some work that needs to be done. And I'm going to devote my time and my energy to exercising my effort to helping in this group, because it takes a 100% effort of every person to make a group all that it can be. And even then, it is by God's strength and God's power that things are achieved, not by our own ingenuity and our own personal strength. Well, God bless us in that effort. And take your songbooks and turn to the song that was announced, number 278. And if there's anybody who wants to become a Christian or has thought about, maybe just needs to make some, recommit themselves to being a builder in this group, then this would be a good time to make those commitments as we stand and sing our